Okay, we're gonna get started. Hope everybody's gotten something to eat. We've been doing this event for about two decades now. It started in roughly the late 90s. Mike's predecessor, one of his predecessors, Chris Hoynes, was one who originally addressed us. And back in those days, we were drawing heavy crowds of 400 or 500, many from Houston. It's very, very good to see the really robust turnout we got here. I know everybody's a little whipped. I'm not sure. I thought I was watching the Cubs game last night. And some of you snuck in a power nap when it looked like it was going to go all the way, and then set the alarm for 1:30 or 1:45 and found out what had happened. We're pleased to have Mike Salata here today, who's our local regional director and whom we hope fervently to keep on during the new transition in the presidency. He leads all the leasing, regulatory oversight, and resource management function for offshore energy and marine minerals development on the U.S. Gulf of Mexico's Outer Continental Shelf, and for oil and gas and G&G permitting activities in the U.S. Atlantic, OCS. He has worked for the Department of Interior for 28 years, so he's been around quite some time to see things come and go. During his tenure, he has played key leadership roles in advancing geological and geophysical survey activity along the Atlantic coast, developing and implementing workspace discharge reviews and scenarios, implementing financial risk operations, and developing the geological interpretive tool systems. He holds a BA in geology and physics from Bowdoin College and attended the Boston College Master of Science program, where he was a seismologist research assistant. The Gulf of Mexico, of course, is the primary source of hydrocarbons for the United States, and I think one of the freest basins in the world where everybody gets to play, generates approximately 97% of all offshore oil and gas, natural gas production, accounting for 17% of total U.S. oil production. And federal offshore natural gas production in the Gulf accounts for 5% of total U.S. dry production. So please help me in welcoming Mike, and hopefully you can give us some positive news today.
Thank you, Ben. I also wanted to thank Tessa for all the information to help me get here, find the right hotel, find the right floor, and all that. It's very interesting. I didn't know what the Joint Society meeting was. There's a long list of societies and a long list of scientists, engineers, attorneys. So I was trying to figure out, you know, what's possible. So Ben did say be optimistic, be outgoing, and so I gave a presentation back in September in Biloxi at the Gulf Coast Energy Summit. And so it was driven out of our deepwater report that we put out, and it talks about deepwater Gulf of Mexico. So part of my talk, a great majority of my talk is going to be talking about the deepwater Gulf of Mexico, but I do want to talk about also opportunities around the rest of our program that still owns offshore energy and mineral development. So one of the things that we provide, if you look at my introductory slide on the left, that's actually Cameron out of Headlands. So that's just outside Port Fouchon. So this beach was developed and restored with sand from the offshore ship. So that's another part of our project, and so we'll talk about that. And then on the right, so that's a wind farm, and that's actually five turbines that are offshore Rhode Island. And actually, it's the first offshore farm in the U.S., not in federal waters, but in state waters. But I did want to talk about renewable energy as well in relationship as well, because again, this is for me about opportunities available. So this is the outline. Talk about BOEMs, make sure you understand BOEMs. My predecessor was here, the one he was here, was the Mineral Management Service. So we've just put up pieces since then, and just make sure you all kind of understand where we're at. I'm going to talk about some programs based Jesse, the thing about going, and I think this is critical, the resource science and management, to make that decision based on best available science. And, you know, our goal really is to expeditiously and orderly development of these resources of energy. And in 2005, we were given primarily conventional energy from the local continental shelf plants. In 2005, we were given responsibility additionally for renewable energy, and primarily right now that's kind of that's wind energy. But in between, this is an important part of the mission. So I'm the regional director of the Gulf Master region. It's an operational unit. I don't set policy, but our goal is energy and develop energy to make sure it's not the same. And I think that's a very important distinction for me. I think that's what our regulatory framework is, as Congress set this out in OCS Land Act. And the way I see it, that's what my goal is, that's what we'll continue to do. And I think that there's probably a very bright future in terms of resources available in the pipeline. So I wanted to touch on this because I think it's important before I get into that detailed discussion that all our decisions are based on an environmental analysis. Right? And I'm not going to go into a lot of detail this, but I think one of the things that about the Gulf of Mexico itself, I mean, it's a unique ecosystem. And so it's a very resilient body of water. It has a lot of oil and gas. It has other opportunities. It's great fishing. And that's an important part of what we want to retain. And there's a lot of multi-use that's getting expanded. So I just signed an MOU with the National Research Service because they are able to permit aquaculture in the Gulf of Mexico. So we have these growing uses. And I think the trick here is how to effectively manage all of them together to give all these opportunities a chance. One of the things that we're working with and recognizing of this ecosystem is that, especially around the oil and gas side, is that we're trying to work closely with Mexico as well. Because if there was an oil spill in Mexico, more than likely in a lot of cases, and this has happened historically, I mean, the possibility is that impacts Texas as well. So we're trying to look at Gulf as an ecosystem. We're trying to look at it holistically in terms of scientific analysis. And we fund studies to look at any places where there may be information missing to help us make that decision. So when we make this expeditious and early development, always based on an environmental analysis, environmental impact, putting together environmental mitigations to lessen any impacts that we identify. Okay, so some housekeeping stuff. So if you're interested in the air quality pool, so this is just a quick update. Published in December, and it's going to be implemented effective in March. So that's the plan of the current administration. I think that if you know anything about the air quality rule, there's a lot of input from industry, a lot of things that they question. And so I know we spent a lot of time analyzing those comments, and I think that the rule that's going to come out here in December will be a much better rule and take into consideration a lot of those comments that show up. And so this is where I spend a lot of my time these days. So in July, we issued this notice to lessees about requiring additional security. And essentially, we changed the way we look at the strength of companies. We decided to take away waivers. We provide 10% self-insurance to operators. We're currently going through this schedule. I'm gonna say is those opportunities are in the Deepwater Gulf. And so this is my jurisdiction. Y'all can see it over here, at least, I guess, if that's done. So, but anyway, so the map basically shows offshore of OCS, federal jurisdiction is 9 nautical miles and 9 nautical off of Texas and 9 nautical miles off of Western Florida and 3 nautical miles off of Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. And so the first contour you see coming offshore in red is 1,000-foot line. And so that will be in this report if we find this deep water. So the activity we're going to talk about and the opportunity we're going to talk about is in that greater than 1,000-foot range. And then again, you can see here how we divide the Gulf up into western and central planning areas. Traditionally, we hold health sales in March in the central planning area and maybe a portion of the eastern planning area. And then, and obviously, in the western planning area. OMFA's got a 5-year program to put these schedules up. Our current program expires last year in March. And then the next August should be a new 5-year program, which this administration plans to complete before they leave. For the Gulf of Mexico, we still have 2 sales to do, but we're going to offer up instead of planning areas, central sales, we're going to have a Gulf-wide sale each time. So we have an instant opportunity in the central planning area. If you want to go back and spend your money in the central planning area, we'll have that opportunity. And then the other issue that we've been looking at is what competition we're going to be having with Mexico. So that's a deep water license round auction in December. So they have a lot of properties available off deep water in Perdido. So we're trying to assess what the impact is there. And so we wanted to make more opportunity for investment in the Gulf of Mexico on more regulations. And so this graph shows leasing. If you look at the green, that's leasing greater than 1,000 feet, and if you look at this gray color, it's leasing less than 1,000 feet. So traditionally when I've shown this and I've lumped these two things together, what you get is a decline. But now if you look at it, and you look at this, the decline is in shallow water. And what you've seen, at least through 2014, it's slightly different now. In the past year, we've had a lot of leases in deep water. But we've had a steady interest in deep water, as evidenced by our leases. So I think that's an important story. I think that kind of sets the bar for everything else you talk about. So if you talk about comparison of annual production volumes from the deep shallow water, so for oil, the dotted line is shallow water and the solid line is deep water. So in 1999, we had oil production in deep water and then for gas, it's been very recent, 2014, but essentially that is basically just because of the decline of production of gas in the shallow water. There hasn't been a significant increase of production. So this is from EIA, and what you see here is January 2006, and we had a production in the Gulf of Mexico, only oil production, that's 1.6 million barrels of oil per day. So that's actually a record for the Gulf of Mexico. And so the projections are for that to increase. Most of this is coming from deep water, as we show in the future. But so production in deep water is on the increase, and the expectation is that as more projects come online, that will continue for some time. So I think that sets up a good story to show that the Gulf of Mexico for oil and gas is still a viable opportunity. So this slide shows the number of wells drilled per year. And so you can see that it peaks here in 2001. The one thing that I want to talk about, I want to look at the little gray bar at the bottom. So in 1995, and this is one of the things that the federal government got right, the MMS issued a deepwater royalty relief act. And so basically, as you moved into deeper water, it gave you some production volumes that you could produce before you had to pay royalties. And at the time when this happened, it was, and I'll kind of support this in a little bit, but increase in deep water. Now, we had a little dip around 2010, but in this data, we started to have another increase. The other interesting thing to me, and this starts the discussion of moving to deep water, is if you look at the green, which is the shallow spot that we have out of deep water, that's in deep water. So companies are not only moving into deep water, they keep moving into deeper and deeper water as they drill and make discoveries. And so out of this thing, so Jack St. Malo found 2004 for Jack, 2003 for St. Malo. And so that is the period where a lot of these discoveries were made. They were found out Jack St. Malo in 2013. But this period of leasing and this period of drilling, I think, has found some of the significant discoveries that are now going on production and increasing production profile of the Gulf of Mexico region. And so BOEM has identified, so we do our own analysis internally. We designated our own fields. And so you can see, again, in 2001, that we had the highest deep water designation of fields. And a total of 270. And so this is just going to show the location of the fields, and I'm just going to roll through this. The field well distributed just off the shelf, and the Pliocene field as well. Upper Miocene, more to the east, central planning area, Middle Miocene as well, more to the east of the planning area. Lower Miocene, and then lower tertiary. So, interesting thing, lower tertiary, a lot of these plays, I think. Shell had a recent discovery, and the name is Skelly, and I should know it. But you know, it's like 2 billion barrels are coming into place. So these are opportunities out there that are fairly large. They may not flow as well, but there's some long-term potential available. And so the thing about the lower tertiary discoveries that you see here, and the thing that is, most of them are outboard of this gray area. That gray area, I don't know if you can tell, salts, shell salt. So that salt ends there, and what companies did was go to places that they could image better. And so they drilled locations where they could better image. So for me, and what I'm going to talk about, are the opportunities that still exist. They should go back under that salt, and because we still show that there are a lot of these. So that's just all deep water fields together. So this goes to. This is a slide of deep water wells drilled in the deepest water. And basically, one of the reasons I show this is you can see the progression that industry has moved out to deeper water. So this is as industry overcame technical challenges, they were able to move out further and further into deep water over time. And so the deepest water depth drilled was currently 10,141 feet in the Gulf. I think the deepest water depth on the U.S. side is like 11,500 feet. That technical challenge has been met by industry very successfully in the Gulf of Mexico. And then the deepest wells drilled in deep water each year. So this is TDD subsea, it's water depth and drilling depth. And again, you can see industry going to deeper and deeper drilling depths over time. And currently the deepest well is 35,000 feet. Of that, now we have the depth reserve. development pipeline infrastructure, but to me, what this shows is that the opportunities in the Gulf of Mexico, you can find a smaller discovery in the Gulf of Mexico versus offshore Mexico, because you can subsea tie that here, and you can make a smaller discovery, more profitable because of this infrastructure. So to me, this is the benefit of the Gulf. This can, you can find something that's smaller, and you can still make it profitable. And then we're just going to go through some different, I know we have time, but it's not going to be a quick one. And so, shallow water versus deep water. So this is the UTIRR is in green, and grown reserves are reserves that are produced and they add everything up with the same place. So the thing that I like about this, so if you look at shallow water and you just look at the grown reserve, so it's 49.7 billion barrels of oil equivalent. The potential resource left in the deep water Gulf of Mexico is greater than those proved reserves. Most of those, and all those reserves are on the shelf. The shelf's been producing since, you know, what, 1947? And so you have that much more years, so whatever that is, I think my slide actually says there's 100 years of production, so let's take 100 years. So you have potential another 100 years of production easily in deep water Gulf of Mexico, given the opportunity in the company to work with finding resources and make a reserve. So this is my summary slides for the conventional energy. And this is really the main part of my talk that I gave up when I went up to Boston and I go up to LA. So, to me, the Gulf of Mexico is still a place to find opportunity, and that's my message. I think that that's very important. So, yes, the price of oil is down, but at the appropriate time, the opportunity still exists. And I think that's the great thing about the Gulf of Mexico. I mean, it's been declared dead before, and it always comes back. Like I said, it's resilient. It's a resilient body of water. There's resilient people. And I think there's still a lot of opportunity there. So just to sum up, I'm going to go through a bunch of different bullets, some statistics that I have. So the number of active deep water leases remain robust. They account for over 70% of all the leases. Now, I have to caveat this data ended in December 2014, right? But I still think the message will be true. The lower tertiary trend has spurred the acquisition of numerous types of seismic surveys, as I showed. The number of wells drilled in deep water had rebounded through 2014 to pre-McConnell moratorium levels. The lower tertiary and the Jurassic, which I didn't talk about here, but I did talk about at the deep water symposium because I had an hour to talk about, so I could include more stuff today. But these are excellent exploration targets. They continue to be excellent exploitation targets, and they have continued opportunities for new interest. And so the deep water, the entire Gulf of Mexico deep water portion is assessed between 80% of the main 3 million of discoveries. And the production platform located deep water has been installed since 2009. So again, continuing that expansion into the deep water, continuing building that infrastructure that can help make discoveries more economical. So some of this stuff I think was in my bio maybe. So anyway, as I said, 100 years of production in the Gulf of Mexico. Easily with the production in deep water that's there now, those projects are easily 40-year projects, and with secondary and tertiary recovery, it can even be longer. And again, so the Gulf of Mexico is the primary source of offshore hydrocarbons. 97% of all oil and natural gas production comes from the Gulf. Well, onshore and domestic production in 2014, so I'm not sure that's the same thing by the way. The number changes slightly, but 16% of all oil and 4.5%. All gas in 2014, and the wells in deep water produce 80% of the oil. So to me, the future of oil and gas in the Gulf of Mexico is bright. You may argue that the regulations that we put on there may inhibit that process, and we can discuss that all day. I mean, to me, you know, the agency is about balance, trying to balance economic development and environmental protection. Not having companies go bankrupt, and you have the federal government or the American people actually, because of the taxes going towards decommissioning. deal, we use a ton of energy. And so, in the Gulf, you can see like the whole piece was off the floor. And so you can see the weaker winds are in the yellow and they get stronger up to the purple or whatever that color. So there's some potential, good potential offshore Texas. The reason why there isn't any color in offshore Florida is because the amount of energy put in economic limit and the current technology, they don't think that that is economic to develop offshore wind. But a couple of things that I want to mention, and again, I was in Rhode Island. There's a supply chain from the oil and gas businesses that have participated and supplied. So Gulf Island Fabrication here in Houma produced the five jackets for the Rhode Island wind farm. So I think that that's an important thing for y'all to know. And so as if renewable energy wind farms, they grow on the East Coast, I mean, there's a potential for suppliers in the Gulf to provide services there. So the jackets, you have the expertise. So I think that's an important thing. We've talked to Louisiana DNR, I mean, communications. Matter of fact, Assistant Secretary was at the Rhode Island conference trying to learn about wind energy a little bit more. So I think this is a growth industry. It's a potential. So I don't mean it's not either wind or oil and gas. Let's have to do wind and oil and gas, right? And y'all have experience that can be applied to this industry. The other company that I know, I think Monco provides supply boats up there, lift boats. To help put that in place. So I think this is, so I just wanted to put that out there for y'all to know that there are other opportunities for people experiencing oil and gas and other forms of energy. So that's the end, but I do want to say we are assessing, so BOEM has gone out into the contract with NREL. What that was is offshore wind at 90 meters, and so technology is changing just like in oil and gas. Technology will improve over time. Areas that had low wind energy today that aren't economic could be in the future. So we're assessing wind potential at a higher elevation. So as technology improves and you have these wind turbines that can go higher, that maybe there is potential in the Gulf of Mexico that we can harness. I mean, to me, we have this big, huge shelf off of Florida. That's why I'm disappointed with this no wind energy. You have Tampa sitting right there. Currently, there's a moratorium on oil and gas. So that, to me, would be a great place to hopefully find some wind source that maybe can utilize the wind energy. So with that, thank you. Inquiry report, which was what I talked about for most of Commission 97, is online and has control of the data and information. So thank you very much.
Make some of this stuff economic, so thanks a lot for coming. Yes, we left you dessert. You were promised a meal and you're going to get one. Anyway, I think we're going to move on to our next speaker because we've got a sort of a tight schedule.
Professional, he manages Bachelor of Arts degree in political science from Loyola University of Chicago. My friend and a proud Cubs fan these days, Mark Earhart.
Good afternoon. Today's a pretty good day, no matter what happened yesterday, because the Cubs won the World Series, so I'm in pretty good shape. I appreciate the few minutes we have, and I by no means have anywhere as cool of a background as Mr. Salata when it comes to what's happening in the deep water and what's happening in the business of oil and gas in Louisiana. And I am here, and what we have been engaged in as the Grow Louisiana Coalition for the last 2+ years is talking to the people of Louisiana about the importance of the oil and gas business to our way of life, and more importantly, to the way of life of 300,000 Louisianians who work in and alongside the industry every day, all of you. And when we first started a couple of years ago, it was a lot easier to talk about the industry when we were at $100 a barrel, because it was more of a pep rally than it was an actual discussion about the future of oil and gas in Louisiana. But one thing has remained true throughout, and that is the state of Louisiana and the oil and natural gas industry has a century-long partnership. We rely on each other. And one thing that I don't know, and because if I did know when the price of oil was going to go back up, I'd be giving rides in my Ferrari and probably wouldn't. I would have hired somebody to stand here and talk to all of you. But the one thing that we believe in as we talk to the people in the state is that the price of oil will go back up because history tells us that. Most of the people in this room may have seen this happen 4 or 5 times throughout the work that you've all done over the years. The question that we have to ask ourselves is, what do we want Louisiana to look like when oil comes back up? Because this is different now than it was in the mid-80s. It's different than it was in 2001. It's different than when we've seen up and down Poynter Street different companies decide to make different decisions about where they want to do their work. It's different because there's more competition for the things that we do as the state of Louisiana today than ever before. And we as a state have to do things as citizens to make sure that Louisiana remains competitive in the oil and natural gas business, so that companies like you can grow here, so that companies can invest here. Because what is happening now, And really, I'll give you the end at the beginning. We need to speak up as an industry and as a people in the oil and natural gas industry about the importance of the industry in the state of Louisiana. We cannot be quiet anymore. We can't take it for granted anymore, because what's happened is that a great deal of the populace throughout the state, there are people working in the oil and gas business in every parish of the state, every parish. Throw them out. Give me a name. There are people working in that parish. Every day, the industry cuts a check for more than $1 million in taxes to some parish in the state. Direct tax payments. That includes weekends. The industry is doing that, even now. But there are interests that have come into the state as they've worked their way down the Atlantic coast, as they've made moves and done different things with pipelines and things like that, that have come into the state of Louisiana to try and tell the public at large that the industry is not important to Louisiana anymore. We don't need it. We don't need it. We can, if the industry leaves the state, that's okay. We'll take their money and we'll use it to rebuild the coast, and everybody will get jobs doing that. That's okay. We've got it taken care of. We're going to sue as a state. We're going to file lawsuits against dozens upon dozens of companies that have done business here, that are based here, for 80 years, accusing them of doing things that the law permitted. We can't operate like that in the state of Louisiana when the state of Mississippi is developing tens of thousands of acres for offshore development, for vessel refueling and doing things like that, and then at different points when the economic situation was better, offering incentives to companies to do exploration in Mississippi. We can't do it when Texas is right next to us, with more refining capacity than we have, to be able to do the things that we've always done. We have to be able to speak up and tell our leaders that the industry is important. It's important to the future of the state. It's important to our way of life. So I got to the end at the beginning. But that's good, because if we run out of time and everybody runs out of here at 1 o'clock, at least I know I got it. just to give you an idea of where we are, our organization speaks to the public. We have 22,000 members. You don't have to join. It's free to join. All we ask for is your name and your email and your zip code, because we wanted to create a central place where people who support the industry can come together and have their voice be heard. We started with nobody, me, my wife, and my dad. My dad and I worked together. We're up to 22,000 Louisianians who have lent their support. And we've done a variety of things, because what we want to show people is the industry is not made up of boardrooms of places in London or Amsterdam or California or anything like that. And the reason why I say that is because recently I heard a story about one of our elected leaders who says, you know, whenever somebody comes to talk to me, talk to me about companies that have boardrooms outside of the state, I want to hear from people who have boardrooms inside the state. Ta-da! All of you. We represent tens of thousands of Louisiana-based businesses whose boardrooms are in Metairie, Shreveport, Monroe, Lake Charles, Abbeville, all over the state. Lafayette, yeah, I can't forget Lafayette. Okay, we can't forget home to the airport too. But we have to be able to speak up as the people who have those boardrooms, because otherwise there are other people who are talking about why we don't need the industry anymore, why we don't need it. And we just heard a bunch of reasons why we do need it, why we do need it. And there's some things that have, you know, sort of myths that have been going around. You know, we talked about the perception of a changing business climate in the state. Right now, there are 20 parishes in what's called the coastal zone, which many of you may be familiar with. Five of them have decided to file lawsuits against oil and gas businesses, usually around 30 or so each time. And what they're saying is that over the last 80 years, the industry had something to do with the state's coastal situation. And because of that, we're going to file a lawsuit against you, and then you get to prove how you didn't cause the problems we think you caused. I put it this way. I think a lot of people remember cars with leaded fuel. Remember, my dad had one, my grandparents had one, but you know, it was a Chrysler. And you know, my grandfather bought that car in a car lot that was permitted to sell the car to him. He got his brake tag religiously, didn't have a problem. He got his gas at a gas station that was permitted by DEQ, and then whoever else permitted it before DEQ was ready. Did I follow all the rules? These lawsuits are the equivalent of someone knocking on my father and my grandfather's door saying, you know what, 30 years ago you had a car that drove leaded fuel. We think leaded fuel caused air emission problems and has led to global warming. We're going to sue you for what we think your portion of that problem is. My grandfather, my dad, looks at that guy and he says, what are you talking about? I bought the car from a guy who's licensed to sell it to me. I got brake tags all the time in the past, and I bought fuel from a permitted gas station. Why in the world are you standing in front of me telling me that I owe you money? And you know what the response really is? Because we think you're the only ones who have it. That's what it is. Somebody asked a bank robber once, why you rob banks? My man, right? That's where the money is. That's what's happening in the state of Louisiana right now. And we need to stop it. And the way to stop it are the people of the industry, the people who support the industry, speaking up and saying, this is a bad idea. It hurts us. It hurts our way of life. And when someone says, the governor who supports the lawsuits, says, I have to act in the best interest of the state of Louisiana, the answer we need to give them is, we are the state of Louisiana. We are Louisiana oil and gas. We have to be able to speak up and say that, because otherwise, we're going to get run over. It can't be done the way we've done it before. And here's something else that people need to know. We get these questions a lot about the coast. We get questions at different times. Well, you know, what about the industry in the coast? What's happening? And I compare it to this way. You know, the example of, if a tree falls in the woods and you're not there to hear it, does it really matter? The argument I would make is, just because the governor or some other folks who have their own interests, like tribal lawyers who decided to sue the industry, just because they weren't standing in the forest to watch all the trees fall, the trees have been falling for a long time. The oil and gas industry is the number one private investor in Louisiana's coast. The number one private investor in the coast. We've been that way for two decades. The only entity investing more money in Louisiana's coast is the federal government. That's it. Corps of Engineers. We are investing over a certain period of time $3.37 billion that have been used for coastal projects. off of revenues collected from wells in the coastal zone over about a 7-year period. Starting in January, the state is going to receive what we estimate is going to be, with between royalties and other types of investments in the GOMESA funds, $200 million a year directed to the coast. All of that money needs to be spent on coastal projects. When's the last time we've seen government be able to spend $200 million in a year on profitable, constructive, productive things? We don't have a money problem when it comes to the coast. We have a science problem. We have an execution problem. Suing the industry to try and get more money because you think you need it doesn't solve that problem, especially when there are dozens of projects going on right now all over South Louisiana, where the industry is partnering with parishes, partnering with the state government, and partnering with the feds to do all types of things to address the challenges on the coast that we face. The only people that are missing this whole equation are a small group of tribal lawyers who are going to try and get millions of dollars in fees off of the deal. They're the only ones, and they're the ones pursuing the legal situation that can hurt the business of the industry overall. But when someone talks to you about the industry, because I mean, you talk to each other, you know, and people say, well, what about the coast? I would argue that you could say confidently that there are dozens of projects going on right now where the industry is doing things across South Louisiana to protect our communities. The other part that I would argue is that we've been working together as an industry and as communities for a century. We made decisions as a people, whether it was after World War II when we needed to rebuild or there was a building boom in the country. How are we going to provide energy to the homes as people moved into the suburbs? How do we refine products to meet the demands that consumers have all over the place? Our leaders in our parishes and the industry and the government all made decisions to pursue the development of the industry in the state. And since the 20s, since we first started working on this, places like Calcasieu Parish, Vermilion, Terrebonne, Lafourche, their population has doubled. In some cases, in some parishes, their population has gone up 5 times since 1920. And during that time, we built roads on vacant land, industry investments and taxes, built schools and hospitals. We got into this together. So singling us out now for something that we've done legally just doesn't work. And what it tells the people who want to make investments here is that we don't want you to be here. That's the furthest thing from the truth. But in order for that message to get out, we have to tell our leaders, we have to tell others that the industry is important to the state. And that's the main message I would leave you with. If you want examples of what's happening, you know, right now, ConocoPhillips down in Terrebonne and Lafourche, they have something like, what is it, I have it up here, something like about, I think it's at least 100,000 acres, I'm sure I'm lowballing, that they manage on every, they're not even developing the land. It's marshland that they're managing on behalf of the coast right now. There have been miles of new shoreline created up and down St. Bernard Parish. Companies like Chevron and Shell, many of the companies that all of you, probably, you're probably doing a lot of these projects now as well, and we want to know more about them. People need to see these examples so that they know that the industry is part of who we are and what we do in Louisiana. We aren't the enemy. We're essential to the future of the state. Essential to the future of the state. And when people start talking about, well, fossil fuels and energy exploration, we don't need it as much anymore, because that's what's happening. And I'll begin to sum up with this. This afternoon, BOEM is having a hearing to go over the seismic data section of the next 5-year plan for offshore exploration. And one of the things we've been very aggressive in is trying to encourage people to attend that hearing. Provide your comments. If you can't show up at the Wyndham Garden Inn by the airport sometime between 4 and 7 today, get on the internet and give your comments. My friends who are the independent professional earth scientists, who I saw a couple of weeks ago, the government needs to hear from you. They need to hear from you, because there are groups of people who are going around saying we don't need fossil fuels anymore. We don't. But then they forget that they own one of these, that they have a phone in their pocket. They forget that when they go home and plug their electric car into the wall, they forget where the electricity comes from. You know, there's a guy who's a geologic economist at the University of Texas, which may be one of the most awesome job titles ever. And what he says is, he takes decades for consumer behavior to change, especially when it comes to energy demand. Energy demand's going up. BP does a worldwide study every summer, and they say between now and 2035, demand's going to increase by a quarter. Natural gas is going to go up and surpass coal as the number two energy source. Well, this gentleman says, all you have to do is look at India. Every 5 years, the number of cars registered in the Republic of India goes up 50%. All of those cars are running on fossil fuels. All of them. That's not changing. It's not changing. We're innovating and developing new ways to utilize the products that we create through the safe production of fossil fuels, and we can do it all here if we have a state that's competitive and we tell our leaders what we want from the industry. So I appreciate the time that you've given me, and I would leave you with this. If you want to check us out, go to the Grow Louisiana Coalition.com website. We're adding folks. If you support the industry in Louisiana, sign up with us. We're not asking for anything other than your name, so that when we go in and we go on television and we talk to people, and different things with Senator Hewitt, we've talked about it at different times. We want to be able to walk in and say we have 25,000, 50,000, 100,000 people that support oil and gas in Louisiana. And we want to be able to say it with confidence and represent the people who believe in the industry and the state. Please try to attend the Bowen hearing that's this afternoon if you can. If not, go online and let your voice be heard. And finally, talk to the people that we elect as our leaders, from the parish level to the legislature to the state. We need to tell them that the industry is vital to our way of life. We have to protect it, and we have to grow. They won't do a thing unless they hear from us. They'll listen to all the other people blabbing on. And with that, I'll quit my So I appreciate the time you've given us, and once again, thank you for today. Thank you.